after 17 hours of debate that stretched to 4 o'clock in the morning, the state Senate passed a police reform bill. Supporters say the bill makes important steps towards scaling back the power of police and protecting communities of color. Here's State Senator Cindy Friedman.
Policing is a tough job. You make mistakes sometimes. We allow for those mistakes. We allow for those mistakes in this bill. But sometimes you just got to take that responsibility that you get when you have that kind of job.
Now, opponents say the process was rushed and sidelined law enforcement voices. Here's State Senator Dean Tran.
We have in front of us a divisive and politically driven piece of legislation aimed to divide us even more. Look at what it is doing to this Senate and imagine what it will do to our state.
So with that context, what exactly is in the bill and where does it go from here? Joining us to help break that down is Rahsaan Hall, director of the Racial Justice Program for the American Civil Liberties Union of Massachusetts. Rahsaan is a longtime advocate for police reform in Massachusetts. Rahsaan, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me back.
So we talked to you last week, and at the beginning of last week, you participated in a press conference announcing the initial bill. This final version that passed the state Senate last night, would you endorse it?
We are very pleased with what we see in this bill. It's a strong step in the right direction, and we applaud those in the Senate who fought for some very important language. There's clearly further to go, and we're hoping that the House does more. But we are in need of bold policy changes that address structural racism and systemic inequality that is at the root of our policing institution. And this legislation that was introduced last night is a firm and strident step in that direction.
Obviously, it was a challenging bill for the state Senate that voted around 4 a.m. this morning. As it has come forward, I hear what you're saying about the steps forward it takes. Is it an appropriate legislative response to the massive protests of Boston across the nation, to the police killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis in May?
I think the legislature operates within their jurisdiction, and they have taken into account pieces of legislation that had been introduced through this legislative session and had conversations with those inside of the various caucuses to come up with a piece of legislation that tries to speak to some of the concerns that had been raised in the street. But let's be clear that police reform, this is one piece of a larger mosaic of transforming how policing happens in our country. And so it's important for the courts to do their part. It's important for others in law enforcement to do their part. And it's also important for the people who are on the ground, the activists and organizers, to continue to do our part to raise up the concerns of people in the community.
So I want to ask you the flip side of that question, too. Yesterday, we spoke on air with Boston Police Patrolmen's Association leader Larry Calderone, who expressed concern that officers in the Commonwealth were inappropriately being painted with the same brush as the Minneapolis police. Do you believe the reforms in this bill, as passed this morning in the state Senate, are proportionate to the needs of policing change here in the Commonwealth?
Yes. You know, I think we here in Massachusetts suffer from what I like to call liberal exceptionalism. We think because we were one of the early abolitionist states and one of the first states to pass same-sex marriage, and because we normally vote for the Democratic nominee in presidential elections, that we don't have these other issues as it regards to race or other social justice issues. And that's just not true. The fact that the Bill Barr Department of Justice released a report raising significant concerns about the way policing was happening in Springfield, Massachusetts, where the narcotics unit was regularly going around and punching people in the face. The fact that there is a scandal surrounding the Massachusetts State Police for overtime misuse, it says something about the level of policing. And I take umbrage with the fact that Massachusetts law enforcement always tries to distance itself from police departments across the country. Yeah, there may be one police department that's bad somewhere else, but that doesn't excuse the entire institution of policing, and we really can't set ourselves apart that much.
So the bill has some big changes in it. You know, we talked about certification. There's, it addresses facial recognition. It does take on qualified immunity, which is so complicated that when you and I are done talking and after a break, we're going to bring our legal analyst on to just walk us through how that works. I know you know that there has been criticism that this bill was rushed through without sufficient public discussion and public hearing. What do you say to that criticism?
I will say that a lot of the pieces in this bill come from other pieces of legislation that have already had a hearing. Point in fact, the qualified immunity language that is in this bill comes from a bill that was filed by Representative Michael Day in the beginning of this legislative session back in January of 2019 and had a hearing on September 24th and was voted out of committee favorably. So I can understand the concern that this entire omnibus bill has not a full-blown hearing, but we also have to recognize the practical aspect of the timing. The legislative session ends on July 31st. There is only so much time to be able for the Senate to pass something, the House to pass something, for the conference committee to come together and put something forward, then be passed by both houses, and then give it to the governor, who has 10 days to decide if he's going to sign it. And then if he doesn't, come back to those bodies and then get it done by the end of the legislative session. So there are these time constraints that exist. And just because this is the first piece of legislation that gets introduced and dealt with in this moment to be responsive doesn't mean it will be the last. We're hopeful that as we continue to advocate and push, that there can be broader reforms.
You know, one of the part of the backdrop over the last several days is this bill has been taken up in the state Senate, has been the lobbying that happens, the positioning, the phone calls, the discussions that happen from all the parties involved. And I'm thinking about advocates for reform and advocates for police officers. You know, I'm just an illustration. Just now, I gave you what Larry Calderoni said yesterday. You pushed back and said, you know, there's still a lot of history there. He would probably come back and say, yes, but we haven't had anything like Minneapolis. My point in all of this is there is more work to be done. Is there a path forward that gets a police reform bill fully passed and signed in the Commonwealth that can be supported and endorsed sufficiently by all the parties involved?
I think so, but it also requires a level of truth telling to happen. And one of the things is that the police advocates have not been entirely honest in their opposition to this. They're going around telling people that they will lose their homes if qualified immunity is restrained or limited in any way, which is just not true. Officers are indemnified. Police will always claim that the sky is falling when there is an introduction of progressive reforms. And time after time, reform after reform, we found that not to be true. And so certainly there needs to be people coming together to the table, but we cannot lose sight of the reason that there's a conversation about police reform. Nobody's talking about overhauling the way the fire department does its job, because people are not victims of the level of violence, especially in communities of color and Black communities in particular, because of the way fire departments do their job. But when we talk about what's happening in policing, that's what has caused this, and we cannot lose sight of that.
Now, House Speaker Robert DeLeo says he hopes to have a virtual hearing on the Senate bill this week. Do you expect similar reforms in a House version when it comes forward, more or less?
We're hoping that it has similar reforms or even more progressive reforms, and we hope that it happens soon.
And Rahsaan, in our last minute or so, we've heard a number of guests on the show these past several days point out that various approaches to police reform have been tried for years. If this bill doesn't become law now, will public will sustain for reforms into a new legislative session?
I believe it will. I think we've come to a tipping point where people have begun to understand the reality of police violence in poor communities and communities of color. It's taken a while since the murder of Michael Brown and many others since then, and the George Floyd murder was the most recent one that is seared into our imaginations. And so I am encouraged that the young people and the people of all different races and political ideologies coming together to raise a concern about the way policing happens will sustain this movement and sustain this energy and this chance to really change how policing happens in this country.
Well, we will continue to watch the story. Rahsaan Hall, Director of the Racial Justice Program for the ACLU of Massachusetts, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.